So end-to-end delay usually is thought of as starting at the point when the sender sends and the receiver receives.
Wait, the sender sends from the application to the writer on the home, right? And then so we count it from the time that the data starts from the host on the router to the destination router?
Well, there's no router in the host. You've got to take the time from the host to from the source to the first router, the time from the second router, the time in the first router, and the time to the second router, the time in the second router, and the time from the second router to the destination.
So when it reached the beginning of the destination or the destination router, you don't care about how long it takes to pass through the destination router.
Okay, so I think there's a termination problem here, a terminology problem here, in that we don't call the destination a router. The destination is a host. In the scenario you've described, we have, hold on here. Missed. In the scenario, okay, we have a source, we have router 1, we have router 2, and we have destination. Okay, the source and the destination are not routers. Okay, we don't call those routers. Okay, so now we have an application running in the source, right, which wants to send a message. And depending on the problem, you may be told to count the time from when the application wants to send to the point when the source host actually sends on the network, or not, right? I mean, normally we would think of it as the end of the end-to-end delay as just the time from when the message is sent by the source host on the network to the time it's received by the destination host on the network. Okay? So, good. Good question. I mean, I think... practical problems, practical situations, you may want to take into account that time on the source and on the destination host, or not, depending. Okay? But I think for a networking class, we usually just talk about it as being from the time the source actually sends to the time the receiver actually receives. Okay, before we get going into today's material, a couple of things. At 12:10 today in ETRL room 101, which is, you know, ETRL is the sort of newish building over that direction. ETRL 101, Dr. Mike Foley is going to talk about how an international standard for Bluetooth got created. Bluetooth is a networking technology, so it's relevant for this class. So if you have time, it would be a good thing to do, to go and learn something more about how all this actually fits into the business of computing. Also, Dr. Foley is going to come by here. We've managed to use a lot of time already. He's going to come by here 10:30-ish or so and be here to talk with you about other things. So talk, please interact with him. Find out about things like career issues. He's willing to take questions and sort of help you out in figuring out what it is that you're going to be doing next year. So please ask him questions and listen to what he has to say. He's got a lot of experience in the industry. He worked for Microsoft for a long time as their chief Bluetooth architect, and now he works actually for the Bluetooth standards group. So anyway, that's what's on the agenda for today. Because we got a little bit of a late start, I may not let him start right when he gets here, but we'll do that. Okay, any other questions for me? before we go on. Okay, so I'm going to kill half the lights. Bank. And talk about, I think this is where we ended. No. Somehow I managed to get to the wrong place. Okay, so we were talking about HTTP last time, and want to talk now about how the sort of behavior of the lower layer transport affects the design of the upper layer application protocol. So originally when HTTP was created, it was a standard that transferred one object per TCP connection. So a host would make a connection to the source and get one object and then make another connection for the next object. And remember, displaying a web page actually means getting this HTML file that has lots of references to pictures and other things, and then retrieving all of those things onto the page. So non-persistent HTTP has to make a connection for each thing on the page, even if they all come from the same source. So, performance problem, and we're going to look at why it's a performance problem. So, a later version of HTTP protocol introduces the idea of persistent HTTP, which lets you retrieve multiple objects per connection, and let's see why that helps. So here's the way that non-persistent HTTP goes about it. The web browser, the HTTP client, makes a connection to the server asking for just to make a connection. That's all that happens here. We just say, I want a connection to you. And the server says, okay, I'm willing to talk to you. And then the client can send the request message that produces the actual data from the web page, say, back from the source. And the fact that this takes two messages is really sort of built into the way that the transport layer protocol, TCP, works. There's sort of nothing you can do to get around this. This is just what you have to do from an application in order to use the network at all. Okay, so the server, remember the server at the bottom of the previous page, the server had sent the response. It's a non-persistent connection, so the server closes the connection, and then the client reads through the HTML file, finds all the referenced objects, and repeats all of those previous steps are repeated for every object on the page. Okay, so how long does it take? Well, it takes as long as it takes to make the connection. That's one called round trip time, from the time you say, I want a connection, until you get the response saying, okay, we'll do it. Then we can send the request and get back the response, which takes, you know, some amount of time depending on the size. So this is, I think, our first instance of a diagram like this, and you sort of got to get a sense of what these mean. Time progresses downward, and what we're seeing is the amount of time it takes a message to go from the source to the destination, the amount of time it takes a reply to come back, and so on. And so it all adds up, and the total amount of time that it takes is like so. Okay, so it's just kind of a graphical display of that. So two round trip times, plus a little bit of transmission time. Okay, so we've gone through that. The persistent HTTP then says, let's not close the connection at the end of the transfer, and instead leave it open and reuse it for all the subsequent requests that are going to the same server. Okay, so the server, let's see, do I have a picture of this? I hope I have a picture of this. No, how silly. All right. So let's draw a picture. That's the thing to do. We're going to have time going down. We're going to have the connect request. And the OK. So now we have the connection. And now we send the request for the HTML page. Say. And get back the HTML page. And now the client starts reading through the HTML page, of course, and it has to find all those references that exist in the page and make requests for them. But what it can start doing is every time it finds a request, every time it finds a reference, it can just start sending those requests and the responses come back like so. And notice that we don't have to wait a whole round trip time for every one. Okay? So we save all that time associated with setting up a connection, but also we don't have to wait a whole round trip time for every response. We can sort of pump out all the requests, one right after the other, as soon as we see them, and the responses come streaming back. Right? So that's why we want to use persistent HTTP. Questions? Diagrams are clear.
What are the benefits of non-persistent HTTP?
It was simple.
It was just simple.
It was the first idea you have about how to do it. So that's what was done. Okay. So that's sort of the overall. Yeah, I'll get there in a second. That's the overall. Sort of structure of how an HTTP interaction goes. Now we're going to dive into what the actual messages look like. Yeah, go ahead.
So is the non-persistent still used then?
Yeah, it's still supported. And when we build our proxy server, I think we build it as non-persistent. Right? So once you had the code for it, it sort of never goes away. Okay, and what they did was they put messages into the protocol to say what we're supposed to do, use persistent or non-persistent. Okay. Other question? Here, another question. All right. So what's in the HTTP messages? There are two kinds. There are request messages and response messages. The messages themselves are just plain text. You can read them, and we're going to do that here in a second. We're just going to make a actual connection to a web server where we can see in detail what the messages look like. So we start out with a GET request. Actually, GET or POST or HEAD are things that the clients say. The request is a single line of text followed by a bunch of additional information that are called header lines, and those are also each on a separate line of text. And so if you're used to doing file processing with programs, you know that the lines end with a new line character, or on Windows machines a carriage return new line combination. These things are similar. They end with a carriage return and new line. And at the end of the headers, they indicate the end of the headers just by putting in a blank line. Right. And then comes any additional information that might be part of the request. So I think there's a diagram here that sort of lays that out. These are lines of text. Right? And so the actual request name is called the method, get, post, head, those are the usual ones, followed by a space, followed by not the URL, the location on the server, I don't know why they keep making that mistake. Notice that this thing is not a URL. It's a location on the server. And the protocol version. This is not the version of the file. This is the version of the protocol. So HTTP 1.1, say. And then a carriage return and line feed to terminate the request line. Then come the headers. We'll talk a little bit about what those are used for in a second. A blank line, just looks like carriage return and line feed. And then comes whatever data may be associated with this request. If it's a post request, there will be data here. If it's a get request, there won't be any. Okay, two methods, two kinds of requests for uploading form input. So you know, like on our file submission, our homework submission page, that's a form, right? You fill in some stuff on it, and you click a button at the end. That's called a web form. And what a web form does is it collects some information from the client or the user, human user sitting in front of the client program, and sends it to the web server. Okay, and there are two ways of doing that. One goes by the name POST, and it really is spelled with capital letters. And that's what I use on my web page, is the POST method. So the input there is part of the body. All right, that's POST for input. The other method is called the URL method, or just using the URL in a GET request. And you see this less and less these days, I'd say, but some websites still use it. You have a URL like this, and then it uses the question mark symbol and the ampersand symbol to separate the fields of the input being sent, and it's just part of the URL. And it's a URL, guys. Come on. HTTP colon. Right, that's what the URL looks like, and so all of that information gets passed as part of the URL. The web server has to know that whatever this part up to the question mark is actually a program that can process that input, and so that's what happens. So two different ways. Right. HTTP 1.1 added the put and delete methods. I've never used those. I've never implemented any site that used those. That seems a little bit inherently dangerous to me. Okay, so the responses from the web server come back looking similar. They're still plain text. They start with something identifying what the protocol is. Again, protocol is about agreement between sender and receiver, so you got to know what the rules are. So one thing, this is actually a very clever technique that is not uniformly obeyed in the protocol world, is to put the version, the name and the version of the protocol in the messages. Right, that helps the receiver of the message know what he's supposed to do with it. Then comes a number, which is a concise way of saying this worked or it didn't work and why, and a message that explains what happened. So remember, when you go to a web page that isn't there, you'll see something like a 404 error. Well, that's part of the protocol. Of the HTTP protocol, it says if you didn't find the file, you're supposed to, in your response, say 404 here. Okay. The header lines in the response provide some metadata about the server, the file length, what it is that is in the file, and whether this is going to be a persistent connection or not. So this connection close header says that we're doing a non-persistent connection. And then comes the data. So the structure of this is really just the same as this, except that in a response, we have instead the protocol and version, the status number, and the status message. Oh, so here they actually list off the different messages. 200 okay, that's a normal response. 301, the server is telling you that whatever it was you were looking for isn't there anymore and you should go somewhere else to do it. Often this is used, this is not used, but instead people actually build a web page that tells the user that the file has moved so that people will fix their bookmarks. So, Mike, have a seat, and I'll finish up here shortly, and you can have the floor. 404 is not found, 400, bad request, version not supported. Okay, so all those numbers are standardized, right, so that everybody knows what's going on. So to wrap up, I thought we would just demonstrate how you can see exactly what this protocol looks like. Save those. We'll see how well this works. Okay, so the Telnet program is a, let's do something to get these up higher so you can see them. The Telnet program is a program Telnet program is a program that exists on Windows and Unix machines that lets you make a TCP connection to an arbitrary host and port and view the text that goes back and forth. Now, for a lot of ports that you may try this to, it will just produce nonsense. You won't be able to type in the things that are needed to make the server do anything interesting. But because HTTP is purely a text-based protocol, it works, right? We can type text and we can read text with our eyes. So, here what we're going to do is we're going to telnet to localhost. I happen to have a web server running on here at port 8080. Okay, and then I can type in, let's see, what do I want to get? /http/1.1. Well, I wasn't fast enough. It's not very forgiving. /http/1.1/, and a blank line, and there we go. Okay, so we got back this is the end of the response, which is the end of my HTML page that runs there. But what's more interesting for us here is back up here at the top, we can see the response headers. So here's my request, /http/1.1, and the blank line. Somebody produced another blank line along the way, and here's the response. http://1.1, bad request, 400, bad request, but then I don't know what is wrong with my request.
Let's have it needs a host header.
Oh, I forgot the host header. That's right. Okay, that's what I forgot to do. We're supposed to put in a host header after that. But I couldn't type it fast enough, so that's all right. But it was forgiving of me and sent back the answer anyway. So, headers, content length, content type is HTML, and my server identifies itself as running CherryPy 3.02. And then comes the HTML code. Okay? So, you can play with this, play with Telnet, connect to a website, and see what it says. Most of them will not, I think, be quite as aggressive about closing connections as mine is, but you can have fun with it. So, that's where we're going to stop with this material today. We will continue, talk about cookies on Wednesday, and then talk about email. All right, so we'll be about a half a lecture behind because we still need to talk about cookies, and then we'll move into email. We're definitely going to skip FTP. Take a look at it in the book, but I'm not going to lecture on that. So with that, I'm going to wrap up and ask Dr. Mike Foley to come forward. And I think he has a few remarks, but mostly would like to answer your questions and discuss what's going on in the networking world.
So. All right. Very good.
And I'm not gonna record you. I think that's probably...